Sandra, and Noah.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Theater World Podcast. My name is Noah Bender.
And I'm Sandra Nemchik. And today we have a review, something very new.
A Broadway review.
A review for a musical, and a very new Broadway musical, which was revived. We have Sarah Gloss, who is one of our founding members. I was going to say fathers, but you're not a father.
Founding daddies.
A founding mommy, if you will.
Yes. Oh, yes. A founding mommy of Theater World.
Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Noah and Sandra. Good to be here.
All right. So you saw Funny Girl on Broadway. You live in New York. You are an NYU student. You know, NYU, where you go to study.
You got to add that tish to there.
Oh, of course. Very important.
You can't just say NYU.
Oh, yes. What school within tish are you? Oh, so I'm in the Atlantic Studio of Acting.
Well, right now I am in the Stone Street Studio of Acting, but I've got a primary at Hill Studio on Broadway.
Yes. When I applied to NYU, I ended up getting into the Adler School of Acting, which was like too cerebral for me. That didn't strike me as acting. It struck me as achting. You know.
Yes.
Very much like. Live within the space and conquer your emotions within. Yes.
It and Stella Adler specifically, I mean, I'm sure you were told this, but for the listeners, the Stella Adler Studio, you have to wear all black all the time to make you a blank space. But like, that just kind of like makes you like a worker.
And is that why you invested in black turtlenecks, Sarah Gloss?
That's true. Admittedly, I say this as I'm wearing a black turtleneck.
I mean, isn't that kind of normal for a lot of theater schools? Like at Emerson, they made a lot of the theater students wear all black to classes.
Like every class?
To theater classes.
Interesting. Yeah.
Cause like acting classes.
Adler is the only studio that makes students wear black to all classes, whereas like none of the other drama studios do that.
But do you think it's the most pretentious one?
Yes. Well, okay, no. So pretentious in terms of like, it's pretentious in terms of the faculty, because that's the thing too, is that like.
Hope none of the faculty are listening to this podcast.
I mean, if they are, they can come after me and I'm fine with that, you know. I'm not their student. I can say what I want. I can say any tea I've heard.
Yeah, they're not going to fail you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Stella Adler kids themselves aren't as like pretentious as like some other studios. Honestly, I think that if there was any studio that was most like where the students were most self-righteous, I think it would be New Studio on Broadway, TBH. But Stella Adler is the one where all of the teachers are like in their 70s and they're like, I slept with Marlon Brando when I was
and it's I bet that
my
was fun,
way
right?
The highway. Exactly.
You know, back in the day, I think everybody used to wear black all the time. It was like a requirement thing. They had to have like a black leotard or a black t-shirt, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. You must be a blank canvas for the character to inhabit you from within and take over your senses.
Because be Fosse, be Pippin. Go insane.
Yes.
Just a little.
This is not acting class, this is therapy.
It really is, actually. Tell me your trauma and you're a great actor.
Literally.
And that's why I didn't want to be a theater major.
Good for you, Noah.
I thought I wanted to be a theater major until I met theater majors.
Oh.
Admittedly, there are a lot of different types of theater majors. I think that like going to NYU, I was like, wow, all of these like people in the musical theater studio are so different from like the musical theater people I knew in like San Mateo. And then now that I'm in Stone Street, it's like, oh, these are all theater majors still, but they're so different from like the musical theater kids. And then even the kids in like the musical theater studio, there's like a huge difference in like how everyone behaved as freshmen versus like now we're juniors and we're seeing like who kind of ended up where.
Who's going to actually make it?
Yeah. Did anyone drop out of you? How many people dropped out of your program? That's what I want to know.
Like out of like Tish as a whole?
I don't know.
I had an offer. Like,
Isn't it like you go through like some torment like freshman and sophomore year to see who actually makes it?
Yes. That is kind of how it is. And NYU, even beyond-ish, NYU has like a 10% dropout rate after freshman year, just because a lot of students can't handle the city. But yeah, definitely there were people who dropped.
That was the most pretentious thing you've ever said.
That they can't handle the city?
Yes, it's that they can't handle the city.
Sarah's been living in New York for a while, so she has to gain something.
Exactly. I mean, admittedly, I can't even handle the city. You know, I'm leaving as soon as I'm done here. Yep. I don't blame them. But yeah, you know, big dropout rates anyways.
She's just here for the credential. Oh, no, not the credential. Sorry. the graduate, the undergrad.
You said credential, but you mean pretension. Yes, you're here for the pretension of it all.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Anyway.
All right, let's get into this.
Get on to our review. So, Sarah, you saw Funny Girl with Beanie Feldstein, right?
Yes.
And, Ramin
Hello,
Kamu,
gorgeous.
Which I'm really excited to hear about because he's such a dreamboat. Mm-hmm. And Jane Lynch is in it. Who else is in it?
Jared Grimes, the tap dancing guy from TikTok who I like.
Yes, yes. Oh my God, he was amazing. He was honestly like probably the best part, though my soft spot is for Ramin Kamu.
I mean, he's adorable.
Everyone's, yeah.
Yum. Yeah, yeah. Who else was in it? Looking at these, I feel like Mrs. Strakosch was played by someone named Tony DiBuono. I don't know who that person is, but I feel like there isn't anyone else really big in it.
Yeah, there's four leads.
Yeah, it's the mom and her friends that play like poker together, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's like the people that help Funny Girl become funny, I guess, or she's already funny, but funnier. I don't know.
Yeah. Enhance the funny.
Yes. There we go. It should be called Enhance the Funny Girl, comma girl.
So for those who don't know, you know, Funny Girl is a classic Broadway musical from what, 1964 or something, 1960?
It might have been later, like 69 or something like that with Barbara Streisand.
Mid-60s. Came out, written by Jules Stein, the same guy who wrote Gypsy, came out around the same time as Hello, Dolly, and lost all of its Tonys to Hello, Dolly.
Yep.
It's about Fanny Brice, a real-life entertainer from the early 20th century, as she becomes a star in the vaudeville circuit and the Follies circuit, and her up-and-down relationship with the Casanova gambler entrepreneur, Nikki Arnstein, that mustachioed fox.
Oh, how is Ramin's mustache, speaking of mustaches?
Listen, I'm going to be like fully honest on this podcast. I have
a full review.
Mustaches.
Ah.
Yeah.
I have a thing for mustaches, and the mustache was 10 out of 10.
Hey. Amazing.
That's good.
That's what we like to hear.
But because Ramin's part, Mr. Arnstein, is kind of a bland role on its face, right? He's kind of like just the romantic object for Fanny.
And yeah, so that's why he needs a mustache.
Yeah.
Make him a little more interesting.
Did he make some meat out of it?
You know, okay, yes. So going into the actors themselves, because I have thoughts on the show. Mainly if I could separate the thoughts being in actors, and then like the purpose of why this production happened. Mm-hmm. But thinking about actors, Ramin was the best person on stage.
Really?
Well, okay, admittedly, Jared Grimes, he's so like freaking talented with his taps, oh my God.
But he's a supporting character, right? So
yes,
you don't see him as much.
Exactly, he wasn't as big as everyone else. And even though they like gave him a certain amount of like emotional weight and rationale, just Ramin, it was Ramin's show.
Really?
And yes. And my mom and I.
Funny guy.
So let's see. You said he was a bland role, or like Nikki Arnstein was a bland role, which
is. I think
he's
so.
Kind of just like, he's arm candy for a funny girl. Like, yeah. He's just like, she's funny girl. And he's like,
I love you. That's
oh
it.
My gosh.
Yeah. Understandable. And because that's kind of what I got watching the movie. But I feel like. Listen, he was so good. First off, obviously his voice. We all know.
He's the Phantom.
Exactly. And actually, first act, he didn't do as much singing beyond "You Are Woman, I Am Man," and then "I Want to Be Seen with You." Like, he was singing, but it was like, you know, the Jewel Stein, like,
yeah, storytelling.
He doesn't have a huge number, does he?
They had a huge number for him in act two. So that's the thing. During intermission, my mom and I were like, he's so good, but they need to use him more. Don't they know this is the Phantom? But so in season two.
Tell me about season two.
Literally. In act two, he sings the song Temporary Arrangement, which apparently wasn't in the original production.
Yeah, I don't recognize that one.
Yeah. It was written for it, right?
It was not for this revival, but for other revivals. And at least that's what I did. I mean, maybe it was written for this one, but when I was doing research, it sounded like it was written for a different one. And then he sang the song "You're a Funny Girl," and both of those really used his voice, and it really soared, which was awesome. And I think another thing about Ramin is that he was putting a lot of emotional weight into what was happening. I think more than other characters were. Admittedly, there's like a lot of emotional weight in, you know, Fanny's story.
Yeah.
But I mean, we can get to Beanie Feldstein. It didn't feel as like dropped in and like genuine as Ramin's did. And I think it's partially too because Ramin has like this swagger. You know.
And he also is a theater. I mean, like, Beanie was in Hello, Dolly! The Revival, but she's done more TV recently. And I think, like, a lot of the things that we, I mean, Jane Lynch is also a TV actress.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people that were featured are TV people.
I mean, I think that's just the way it's written. Like, Nick is kind of a stoic, serious, dramatic character, and Fanny is very shticky.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think the difference, too, in... like with what was said about like acting for TV versus stage, I actually, funnily enough, I saw Plaza Suite a week
with Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yes, yes, the week.
Oh, I'm sure that was great, right?
Oh, it was really great, but kind of the same thing. I felt like Matthew Broderick, and you can see it in their resumes, Matthew Broderick has done so much more stage than Sarah Jessica Parker, and Sarah Jessica Parker has done so much more screen. And so when Matthew Broderick came on stage, he was chill, he was relaxed, he was in his emotions, and he was naturally projecting without like trying too hard. Whereas Sarah Jessica Parker, you can see her brain being like, this is a different medium. I have to project. I have to make sure my expressions are known. And it felt like she was kind of yelling.
Where also might be hard because they're both married to one another. You know, you kind of like have like somebody to compare yourself to at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. So that could have been, I was actually wondering that, were they insecure performing alongside each other? But I felt that same dynamic in Funny Girl between Beanie and Ramin. With Ramin being like, I've been on stage before, I've done this, I'm relaxed, I know what the audience is going to see. Whereas Beanie, her energy, and don't get me wrong, Beanie, we can get more into Beanie. And she was very, very personable, very funny. And in retrospect, or like at first glance, a really great choice for the role. And she hit the jokes. But it was definitely giving me like high school theater girl vibes.
Ooh.
There's, okay, I don't mean this as an insult. And I mean this to be like honest.
Like
about,
a good high school, like a good production.
Yes, yes, a good high school production.
Because she's still quite young.
Yeah, she's
late
like
20s? 20s.
Yeah,
27, 29. 28?
Yeah. 28, 29. Yeah, what I think it is that because when, and I see this in like, you know, my fellow classmates is that in high school, we are thrust into the world of acting through theater. And then we go to get our formal training. And so many people get their formal training in, you know, kind of reduced, minimalist, black box acting, screen acting. And so you get really good at just doing kind of like small dramatic bits, which like Beanie Feldstein is doing in American Crime Story and all her other movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I think she kind of fell into the same trap of Sarah Jessica Parker and being like, oh, look, I'm on stage now and it's different. And on top of that, she hasn't had like the training for acting specifically on stage the way that like a lot of musical theater performers do. And so I think that confused her senses.
Yeah, it might be.
And I bet she feels so much pressure to differentiate herself from Barbara Streisand.
Yes.
That and like, there were a lot of people that were like, oh, she shouldn't play this role. You know, that's kind of daunting too. Yeah, exactly. There were some people that are coming out going, oh no, we want this person. We want that person. We want Lea Michele. We want Jesse Mueller. You know,
Lea Michele missed her chance. Cool.
Yeah, Lea Michele missed it a long time ago. Maybe with like the height of Glee.
I did actually, I was looking at the Sitz Probe video for Funny Girl and I was reading through the comments and everyone was talking about like Beanie's singing. And I saw a comment that said, Lea Michele would be perfect for this role if only she could read.
Yeah, there's a rumor.
It's so funny that Lea Michele is like indelibly connected with this show but in a way that is kind of pitiful, where we know from Glee and we know from her early life that she's obsessed with Barbara Streisand and Funny Girl and that she wants to be Fanny Bryce. Yes, it was her character on Glee, but it got so annoying on Glee that people were just like, no, fuck you, Rachel Berry. Lea Michele, you suck. And then, of course, all the stuff about her being, you know, terrible to work with on set. And all of the, like, when I just Google, like, Funny Girl revival, I see, like, a lot of the, like, legitimate press stuff.
Glee pictures.
And then just, like, all of these, like, People Magazine tabloid shit articles where it's like, Lea Michele is rolling in her grave. Lea Michele. Lea Michele wishes Beanie Feldstein well, but begrudgingly. It's like all about her bitterness.
I could see her doing that, though. I think that she probably has a lot of like bitterness towards her. She's probably like, oh my gosh, I was playing like Funny Girl's revival in Glee. Like they had that whole scene when they went to New York and she was like, I'm Funny Girl. And then I think like Naya was also Funny Girl. And I was like, how is this happening? They just graduated high school.
Yeah, like, it's crazy that this is like just still a story that's connected with that show. Like her failure is indelibly connected with Funny Girl.
Yeah, she should have pressed Ryan Murphy.
Exactly. And we do have a Glee actress in the show. Just, you know.
Sue Sylvester.
That's right. I totally forgot. That's so ironic, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Her mortal enemy. She's like, ha, 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 ha. I'll never put you in that show, Rachel Berry. I'm going to be in it.
Let's talk about some of the big numbers. Does she nail Don't Rain on My Parade?
So, okay. I am going to be, and don't get me wrong. I'm being very honest and I'm being very blunt about the show, but I still
enjoy it. She's a theater student too, so let's be very clear. She's been training.
I know what I'm saying.
I'm 20 years old, damn it. I know everything there is to know about theater.
Exactly. So I loved the show. I really enjoyed the night, you know, before I get into any honesty, but honesty, Beanie Feldstein was pitchy.
Ooh.
Like for Don't Rain.
Unlikable.
Yeah, it's sad because she had like some really great vocal moments paired with really bad vocal moments. Really bad might be harsh. Like, let me explain. So Don't Rain on My Parade, holding the ending note of that song.
Parade.
Dun, 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 dun.
It was loud, it was big, it was resonant, it was bold. It rang through the theater, everybody clapped, which you need it for that note. Yeah. But also, you know, she like, okay, so it fit there well in her voice. But then with the who is the pip with pizzazz, that part was like off pitch and she was kind of slurring the consonants.
Did the character voice get in the way with
sharp
it?
Notes.
No, it wasn't even a character voice. It was like her head voice.
Ah.
It was, she was trying to go into her mix where she could.
And this
have...
is like a belty, brassy number.
Yeah. And she actually did it even more during People Who Need People.
People. Oh, yeah.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
How was that one compared to the other song?
People was probably like the one that needed the most work.
Really? Because that's one of the other like most iconic songs.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, and like some very basic like phrasing, like the idea that like you never sustain a consonant. You're going to go people, but she was like people.
Oh no.
Yeah. And just people, the idea.
People.
Exactly. And the idea.
Somebody wants to be like, Babs.
Uh-huh. The idea of like switching between her mix and her belt and her head voice. And the way I was confused, I think whoever the music director is, I honestly just think that they didn't go through it enough with her.
And I think maybe she wanted to sound like Barbara Streisand? Is that what you think that she was trying to like accomplish here?
No. No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure she was vocally stressed. And in like the Pit Sits Probe video that I was like the YouTube comments, I think like there were a lot of comments where people got the idea that she like felt under pressure and like that's why she was like coming out pitchy, or that like maybe her range was like different from the songs in Funny Girl. I haven't heard her sing anything else before.
I guess there's a difference between being able to sing and being able to carry a show like this.
Yeah, it's hard to carry a show too, just like by yourself. This is like Funny Girl, and you have to be like a funny girl to be Funny Girl and sing the songs that you know that are sung in that show. Like People and Don't Rain on My Parade are, those two are the songs that everyone knows.
Yeah, and admittedly, like, because as I said, she's a great actress, she was very funny. And I can see how the casting directors were like, Beanie is a great choice for Funny Girl. She's going to be great.
Of course.
And obviously, like, you know, you're never going to get a new Barbara Streisand. So, still, you need to find someone who is wholly themselves and doesn't try to copy Barbara Streisand. So, and I definitely feel like she was trying to be her own type of Fanny Bryce. But I definitely foresee the New York Times being like, dude, there were more, you know, on-pitch girls who could have played this role.
Lea Michele.
Or somebody new. I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Like, we could have had like a TV show. Find Funny Girl.
Would they do that in America? I feel like all of those like casting competition shows are in the UK.
They did it in America, too. They did the Grease is You're the One That I Want with Laura Osnes.
But that was like a decade ago. There.
Yeah, whatever. Bring it back.
That's true. I'm in favor of it.
Let's find a new Funny Girl.
Yes.
All right, let's rah, rah.
Yes, I think Carol Channing should do it. You should bring,
it'll just be me holding Carol Channing the entire time.
I'm gonna live and live now. Get what I want. I know how. Yeah.
I'll need like somebody to like move her arms though, because I can only hold her body and her head at the same time. I need like two little puppet hand people.
She'll do people down the octave, people.
Yeah, because she cannot sing any higher than maybe a B.
Okay, let's talk grandeur. This show has some huge production numbers because it takes place in a vaudeville stage, the Ziegfeld Follies. How do they do these huge production numbers?
Well, you know, now that I think about it, I think these big production numbers, it's almost like Gypsy, where it's these big production numbers happen in realistic ways. Yeah. Like, when I think like, wait a minute, when I was thinking big production numbers, I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, there's like no big production numbers. Like there's maybe one big production number.
The rat-a-tat-tat, right?
Yeah, well, I was thinking Sadie is the only big production number that takes place off of a vaudeville stage. And so that was a really good number. They had a lot of ensemble, like with...
Do they have a giant staircase that they descended down from? No.
Oh.
They had a couch they sat on.
Ooh.
Indeed. And for all of the Ziegfeld numbers, they had really cool costumes, like gorgeous, gorgeous costumes. And the, honestly, I think though, because the costumes were so gorgeous, they didn't have major dancing. But honestly, that's the thing about those big numbers. Oh, there's the Henry.
Well, it's more like a, like, yeah, let's walk and like kind of sashay in. She, yeah, love makes a beautiful ting pose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they had,
it's like showgirl.
Exactly. They had beautiful costumes. They had beautiful choreography. I actually saw, I think Playbill did a feature on the two female choreographers, because really the choreography was amazing. And especially Jared's tap numbers were, mwah.
Oh,
like,
sure.
They were, my mom and I were watching in awe, like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I've been following him for years on social media.
Yeah, yeah, it was really good. And the sets, I think, were really good. The costumes were really great, except whoever the costumer is doesn't know how to dress Beanie Feldstein.
Yeah. I, like, noticed that too. I was like, oh.
Yeah, they like didn't accentuate like her figure in a way that looked good, especially considering it's the 1920s.
And yeah, so you have to have that straight down.
Yeah. Frame. But I like, because I saw that and she was wearing these straight down frame dresses that literally looked like tents on her. And I was like, yeah, what?
There's lots of fabric.
But if you Google, like, you know, like, flapper dresses on like curvy women, or just like keep looking up different dress sizes, flapper dresses, you're going to find, you know, some very flattering, like, you know, dresses from the 1920s on, you know, people who have the same body shape as Beanie Feldstein, like, you know.
So costume art and door research, I guess.
Literally, literally. But, you know, it was still beautiful and glittery and all that stuff.
Did they use mirrors? It seemed like when I was looking at a video, they used some mirrors.
Yeah, there were like these giant like mirrors in one of the Ziegfeld numbers.
Yeah, it was like a very Ziegfeld-y thing.
Yeah, but it wasn't like mirrors. How do I put this? It like you wouldn't have been able to see the audience. It wasn't like mirrors in like dance studios. It
not
was,
like music in the mirror.
Yeah, no, not like music in the mirror. It was like, how do I describe this? Like floor to ceiling, but like kind of dusty.
Okay.
And then like
angled inward.
So it looks like a mirror, but it's not fully reflective.
Yeah, yeah, like the mirrors in American in Paris. If you guys saw that revival,
I saw the video of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Sarah,
it's here.
So Sarah, what's your like final bottom line for this show? Why should people go see it? What did you love most about it? What's your bottom line final statement?
Okay, bottom line for the show. It is a really fun show, you know, and Ramin Karimloo is super talented. He's amazing. Jared Grimes is super talented. He's amazing. Jane Lynch, super talented. She's amazing. Beanie Feldstein, also talented, also amazing. But, you know, leave your...
Slightly less so.
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe she'll gain momentum, you know, over time.
Exactly. And maybe she'll grow vocal confidence, you know. And also, of course, with the show, there's the ghost of Barbara Streisand haunting our memories at every moment. Yeah. But, you know, it's a great show. And especially in this new era where we're re-examining what it means to be beautiful and what it means to be loved. I mean, the fact that Barbara Streisand, a gorgeous woman, you know, in the 60s, everyone was like, well, you can't be the beautiful one. You have to be the funny one.
Just because she had a big nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is like, okay, that's anti-Semitic. Yeah. Obviously, you know, and so as we're and that's like just such a small detail.
Yeah.
But as we're...
Yeah, she's pretty. She's great.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. But even as we're...
Hello, gorgeous.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what makes her unique.
And so as we're redefining like what beauty is in our society and what makes us special and what makes us worth paying attention to, and then also what type of love we deserve, I left the theater with a big sense of self-reflection for my own self-worth as a performer and as a woman, and realizing how much performing and a history of appearances just affects your sense of self-worth.
It does.
Do you think it'll get the Tony?
You know, I actually don't.
You don't think it'll get any?
Best Revival? Really, you think it'll be Music Man?
Oh, not Music Man either. Okay, this is my opinion. I actually refuse to see Music Man because it I don't want to give them any more money. Yeah.
It looks like stunningly mediocre.
Yeah, Scott Rudin.
The way I would describe it, so I saw Moulin Rouge and I loved it. But the story is like, what? And
the story of Moulin Rouge sucks.
Yeah. It's not really much of a story. It's just there for the spectacle.
Exactly. And though it, you know, the story still managed to hit really well in, you know, the film format by Baz Luhrmann, that didn't translate to the stage. It definitely felt like a review.
Yeah.
But I feel like Funny Girl, both Funny Girl and Music Man are going to fall into the same category as Moulin Rouge, where everyone's like, this is this big, you know, multi-million-dollar thing with all these stars and all these producers. It has to win the Tony.
Yeah.
But then at the end, it's like a bunch of nominations, one award for like costumes or something.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I honestly don't know what the best musical, who will get that best Tony. Best musical Tony.
I just listened to A Strange Loop. I really loved that. I'm excited for that show to gain momentum again.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do a Tony podcast.
Yeah, when the Tonys come around, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, Sarah. Let's get into our lightning round. All right, Sarah, do you have a favorite Broadway diva?
Favorite Broadway diva? Absolutely. Patti LuPone. I mean,
classic choice.
Easy reasons.
I mean, did you see her in Company?
I have tickets for Company 2 weeks from today.
Ah, okay, that'll be exciting.
I have already seen her in War Paint, and I met her at the stage door, and that was a good time.
She was a treasure in War Paint. That was not a great show, but she could sing the phone book.
Yeah, it was really good.
Wonderful. All right, here's the next question. Since we were talking about Ramin Kamlou, in your opinion, who's the best Phantom?
Ooh, you know, that's the thing.
Because I know you're a big Phantom head.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Because I would say Ramin Kamlou, but there are many, like, OG Phantom stans who are like, Ramin's sound is too new wave.
But, wow. But the Phantom is kind of supposed to be a rock star.
Yeah. And honestly, like,
and rock
progress. You know, musical theater has to evolve.
Change with the time.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sticking with Ramin Kamlou.
I agree.
If you held a knife to my throat, I would say also James Barber. No.
Oh.
Hugh Panero. He's
just stabbed you. You're dead. All right. Next, what would you have for your musical theater intermission snack?
Always M&Ms.
Going to a show. M&Ms?
Always M&Ms. So is this... Realistically, it's always M&Ms. There's always M&Ms. But if someone was like, you can have any like kind of intermission snack, at the War Memorial Opera House in San Francisco, they offer cookies and hot chocolate in the basement.
Wow. Okay. I think I need to go there.
That sounds almost too decadent. I feel like I revere and adore the crinkling papers of just like a paper candy bag and just
Do you eat your M&Ms during the show even if you haven't finished them?
You know?
Be honest, you're reviewing the show.
Well, cause
and your professors are listening.
I haven't had M&Ms so recently. I don't know. I think it depends. I think it depends on how snacky I am.
You know what is an underrated candy? Is what? mini M&Ms.
Yes.
Those are the best. My you open God. That little,
yeah, the little
top and you just yeah. dump it in.
And do you know what I love? The mini M&Ms when they're coated like on top of things. Like they yeah. made like chocolate chip bar.
Cookies.
Uh-huh. Yes.
They're great in like frozen yogurt. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know what sucks? Big M&Ms.
Oh,
the giant ones are great too. Yes. What are you talking about?
The giant
about?
Ones, I mean, I just think they're too big.
Oh.
Yeah.
You could like suck on them though.
Yeah.
Might as well be maybe like the tiny ones. Know, a gobstopper.
Yeah, a chocolate gobstopper.
Everlasting M&M.
Yeah. All right. Is there a moment in a show or a song that always never fails to make you cry?
Ooh, oh gosh. Yes. In Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes.
Which honestly I think has become more to me a better musical than Phantom.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Gethsemane, when he's like, see how I die. And just like doing that whole
that moment where he goes, all right, I'll die. Like there's so much emotional complexity packed into that one moment. But yeah, I mean, Superstar's way better than Phantom, I think. I think Phantom has good songs, but the story is stupid.
It was like Phantom, okay, it's this. Phantom reeled me in to like wanting to
the
do
Weber professionally. Cult.
Yeah, and the Andrew Lloyd Webber cult when I was like, I was 13.
Sure.
Oh, Phantom, like obviously amazing music, like that's not a debate. And then like, because it's such like, kind of a simple plot, but still very sticky and very strong in genre. It's easy for like me to get like trapped in. And then the allure, go ahead.
Well, there's a whole discussion to be had about why Phantom appeals to teenage girls. Because it's so much about this man who is like,
whisking
you away. He's like, I will make you a star. I will like, it's very much like an abusive, manipulative relationship.
Oh yeah.
But the way that he like reveres Christine and kind of treats her as this kind of angel goddess, I can see it would be very appealing.
Then he kind of kills people for her.
Yeah, to teenage girls who haven't really experienced that form of love yet.
Yes, yes, I definitely
Sarah wants to stalk your love.
That I definitely was, you know, repressed middle school Catholic girl, you know, who was like, there's this dark and mysterious man.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the before you're wise enough to know anything about anything, it's some kind
of... Yeah, that he's a maniacal.
He just wants to sing with you. That sounds like a fun time. Duets.
Exactly. And because the
in
musical...
In the sewer.
Exactly. Yeah.
How romantic.
Exactly.
There's candles, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Sarah, give us your impression of your favorite diva or somebody that you like, Carol Channing, Patti LuPone, Bernadette Peters, Sutton Foster. Give us somebody you
can we
like
hear
to
Patty doing Phantom?
Patty doing Ooh. Phantom. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can do Patty doing Phantom.
Choose somebody.
I want to like do someone who's let me think.
Nighttime sharpens.
That kind of
sounds like sensation.
Okay. This is my impersonation of Liza finding Peter Allen in the bathroom.
Okay.
I love it.
Peter, is that a man you're with? Peter, you're married to me, don't you know? And yet you have another boyfriend? Don't say you did too much cocaine. I know you did.
This is the excerpt of Boy from Oz, right? The deleted scene from Boy from Oz.
Exactly. Said just like that.
And just like that.
Wonderful. And finally, Sarah, can you recall the greatest experience you've ever had at the theater?
Okay, I know. It was winter my junior year of high school.
Okay, paint me a picture.
I went to Australia. We went to Sydney, and I went to the Sydney Opera House, and we saw The Merry Widow. And
I thought you were going to say Phantom.
No.
No, but they're doing an outdoor production of it right now.
In the rain. Yes.
Which it I do. So cool. I do need to do more research on that because I have been falling behind in terms of just like.
Go yeah, fly out. Go
how
fly
do you
out.
Drop a chandelier in an outside production?
I don't
There's
know.
Rigs. There's lots of rigs there. I see.
With a crane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But continue.
Yeah, so The Merry Widow at the Sydney Opera House. First off, it's the Sydney Opera House.
Sure.
But like, damn. And it was in the big, like, Joan Sutherland Theater.
Like, damn.
It was a beautiful production. It was the second production of an opera that I had seen live. And so the first one being Madama Butterfly in San Francisco. But like,
beautiful show.
This, yes, very beautiful. But these costumes, this set, oh my God, the talent, the performers, and the way even still that these opera singers were like multi-hyphenates and deep into their acting and dancing. And it was a fantastic production. And it definitely like expanded my range of being like, Sarah, like it's not just musical theater that's the only valid like performing form. Yeah. I mean, obviously not, but like, it definitely like.
But maybe opera.
Yeah, it got me very into like watching actual opera and following that. So yeah, it was really cool.
You mean Phantom isn't a real opera?
Ha 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 ha.
That's funny, maybe.
That's definitely one of the reasons why I was like, you know. I would tell non-theater people I love Phantom of the Opera and they would be like, Sarah loves opera. And I would have to like, be like, no, but also I sound pretentious by saying that. So I kind of fed into that. But now I can genuinely be like, yes, I watch opera.
That's right.
I'm going
in my black turtleneck. I watch opera.
Exactly. I am going to see Le Nozze di Figaro on Wednesday.
Amazing.
And don't you dare try to correct my pronunciation.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course.
We'll have to invite you to our Tonya party or something.
Oh, yes, our Tony party.
Oh, yes. When is that?
Are the Tonys in June this year or December?
May, at the end of May. Something like that. We'll figure it out.
I got to refresh myself on what's actually coming out this year. But yes, Sarah, do you have anything to plug? Any links you want us to point our listeners to?
You know, I can't think of anything to plug other than I do have a podcast of my own.
That's true.
It's called A Bro's Guide to Glitter. Noah was actually on it 1 week. So, you know.
Talked about drag. It was awesome.
Exactly. So if you like podcasts by people in the Bay Area.
And drag queens.
For you.
Yeah, your podcast all about gender and masculinity and what it means for something to be considered feminine or masculine and kind of breaking down the boundaries between, you know, interests and hobbies that might seem gendered but really don't need to be.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Well, we'll put your social media and all of that stuff in the description. And, you know, follow us on social media. We're at theaterworld_readings on Instagram. And you know what? You made it this far into the episode. Why not give us a little review on Apple Podcasts? You know, that stuff really helps getting the word out. And you know what? Tell a friend. If you're on the train right now, tell the person next to you. If you're in the car, just shout out your window. I'm listening to the Theater World podcast. And hey, you know, go see a play. We can do that these days now.
Write a note, put it in a bottle, throw it into the ocean, and
you know what? We should do that.
That's the best way of enhancing podcast engagement. Message in a bottle.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much 100%. For listening. We are the Theater World Podcast. We will see you very soon. Xandra, y'all good?
I'm all good.
All right, it's all good all right. in the hood. All right, this has been our review of Funny Girl. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye, gorgeous.